Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, primary day, May 19th, welcome, 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 friends, on into the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. When it comes to staying healthy, Cherry, you just have to follow the three Ps, right? Parasites.
Okay.
Protein maxing and peptides, right?
Hey.
Oh, wait, that's at least what I saw on TikTok.
Okay, I was about to say. All right.
Today we're going to talk about all sorts of health advice that's floating around on social media. And to be clear, some of it is perfectly normal health advice. People just getting on there saying, you know, eat your fruits and vegetables. Other, it's a little more out there. And some of it's really out there. We're going to vet some of the health trends that are circulating online today with a couple of experts. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you're hearing or seeing on social media, what you have questions about, what online health trends do you have questions about, what are the pros and cons of health influencers. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're online watching this on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat.
Yeah, and true confession, you know.
Go ahead, confess.
I have followed health trends, you know.
Nothing wrong with that.
And they seem to be working, but I mean, I do have a lot of questions. I won't do anything.
They seem to be working.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But I won't do anything crazy. Like, you got to do your research.
Well, crazy is a relative term, Jerry Gregg. So I don't know what your crazy is or my crazy is or their crazy is, but we'd love to hear from you because this is a safe space and nothing's really crazy here.
Yeah.
We're just going to talk about like what's circulating online because, frankly, that's how a lot of people get health advice these days. 888-477-9499. Again, the email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, we have doctors, so real health professionals. Yes. And so we have our trio of news stories as well. I mentioned it at the very top of the show. It is primary day in Pennsylvania.
The other P.
Yeah. WHYY has reporters spread out across the region and voters, of course, in the Commonwealth, they've already started to cast their ballots in person. They've been mailing their ballots for quite some time. And there are 17 U.S. House seats up for re-election in the Commonwealth. Ones in our area that we've been watching, you've guessed it, the hotly contested 3rd Congressional District race to replace Congressman Dwight Evans. We have four Democrats running, Sharif Street, Chris Rapp, Ayla Stanford, Sean Griffith, all on the ballot. And it's very likely that the outcome of this race will determine who goes to Congress from this very blue district in November. The first district race, which covers Purple Bucks County and a sliver of Monco, also has a contested race on the Democratic side. There's a race in the Lehigh Valley, the 7th district, and the 10th district in Harrisburg. Also, folks from our region probably taking a look at those. There's also races for state Senate on the ballot, state House. Most of those are not contested. And we have two ballot questions in Philadelphia. So all of the information on what you need to know is available at WHYY.org/elections. That's the election guide from our WHYY news department.
And also it's worth noting, because we probably won't talk about it tomorrow when we break this all down.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth noting what's not on the ballot.
Yeah.
This would typically be a gubernatorial primary election year.
Underscore, yes.
And neither of the major parties really have a contested governor's
race.
Josh Shapiro on the Democratic side, Stacey Garrity on the Republican side. And that affects everything, right? Mm-hmm. Not having like a big statewide race on the top of the ballot, that's going to impact things like turnout.
It's
going to impact certainly the number of ads you saw reminding you that Election Day was coming up this year. And so, you know, all those the context factors really do matter when you analyze what's going to happen today and we break it all down tomorrow. We're all going to forget that tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also worth noting kind of what we're not voting on today.
Yeah. And by the way, Avi kind of teased that tomorrow we will have a roundtable conversation where we'll be breaking down the local races as well as national races, because there are five other states besides Pennsylvania that are also having primaries today. So we'll talk about that. And by the way, if you are a Pennsylvania voter, polls are open until 8 p.m. tonight, so be sure to cast your ballot.
Absolutely. Let's head across the bridge now to New Jersey.
Okay.
They're not having a primary today.
Mm-mm.
However, the New Jersey-based organization behind perhaps the most annoying commercial jingle of all time has just hit a legal roadblock. What commercial jingle am I talking about? Oh, sweet summer child, you already know.
Break it down.
1-877 cars for kids.
Ah!
Hey, earworm of the century. Go ahead.
A judge ruled this week that Lakewood, New Jersey-based Cars for Kids can no longer run its mind-numbing commercials in California, and that's because the commercial omits key details about what this charity actually does. Most of the money goes to a separate organization called URA. URA supports Jewish children from many socioeconomic backgrounds. It also has an adult matchmaking service, according to the New York Times. The plaintiff in this case in California said he thought when he donated his car, he was supporting underprivileged kids from around the country, not a religious organization based in New Jersey. Cars for Kids is appealing the decision. However, as of now, I suppose they cannot play that jingle in the state of California.
Some people may say, lucky California.
They may say that.
They may say that. But I want to point out, this is not the first time Cars for Kids has been in trouble. The Minnesota Attorney General went after them back in 2017. Back in 2009, according to the lawsuit, Pennsylvania actually went after Cars for Kids. And they got fined for the very same reason. A lot of misleading ads. And then they had to settle that case and agree to make additional disclosures in the Commonwealth around their advertisements. But this has been an issue that has come up again and again, I think, in New York, Oregon. So this has been, this misleading thing has keeps bubbling up to the surface in California. Just, I guess they actually said no more.
For sure. And I do not want to defend the people that made that ad, because it is so annoying. However,
it worked.
However, if you're the guy who's donating your car, which is a pretty big donation, and the person you're donating it to just says it's for kids, and you don't ask any follow-up questions or do any research,
I
have trouble imagining myself falling into that trap.
Yeah.
Like someone says, this car is for kids. And you go, sure, have my car. It's for kids. You didn't ask any follow-up questions? It's for kids?
Yeah, I guess, you know, they omitted a lot, and I don't know how hard it is to do the research to find out more, but no more in California, and they have been banged multiple times for this issue.
Sure. Yeah. Is it the worst commercial jingle of all time?
I was thinking about that. The one that's worse, meow, 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 meow.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Meow, 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 meow.
That's a tough one. How about Liberty, Liberty, Liberty?
Yeah, that one's pretty bad.
Because my daughter's onto that one right now, and it sucks.
Yeah. Anytime you have that repetition, it's going to stick in your head. And
can I shout out a good one?
Yeah.
That our audience will not know, but you will know. Mm-hmm. You might know. That was from, it was a D.C. area jingle from when we were kids for Jerry Subs. Do you remember that one? Ooh, ooh, Jerry's.
Oh, I don't.
It's really good. Look it up.
I'll have to look that one up.
That one had a groove to it.
I like it. Well, sometimes, you know, it could be a good one, you know, and not everyone has
call
to be
Empire
annoying.
Today, yeah. Folks.
Story I missed over the weekend. Apparently, people from all over the world, including here in our region, went absolutely crazy over the release of a new Swatch pocket watch. Now, if you have not seen this watch, it's called the Audemars Piguet Swatch Royal Pocket Watch. It's a collaboration between the two Swiss watchmakers, and chaos, right, ensued at King of Prussia Mall with lines that were five people deep, and it extended throughout the mall. Take a look at the madness if you're watching on YouTube. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Audemars Piguet Swatch Royal Pocket Watch. Police had to shut down the mall for a period on Saturday. And if you are not into high-end watches, you're probably like, why? Well, those Pigways, they are top of the line and they start around $20,000. This Swatch Pocket Watch ran at $400. So that's why people went absolutely crazy.
They went crazy because it was a cheap watch pairing up with an expensive
exactly.
watch?
And they went absolutely mad.
That's
people camped out for days in Times Square in New York. They had to call the police in the Netherlands, and they used tear gas in Paris.
So KOP was kind of tame. All they did was shut down
the mall. All they did was shut down the mall. And it got me to thinking, what products have driven people absolutely crazy?
Uh-huh.
I wonder about that. I looked it up. You know, people wait in line for iPhones for sneakers.
iPhones was going to be mine, yeah.
But the Stanley Starbucks tumblers, apparently
the
people, Stanley Starbucks.
What's a Stanley Starbucks tumbler?
Tumbler, those big cups like this.
Yes.
but they're like designer ones. And apparently people camped outside of Target for these things.
The design was Starbucks?
Yeah. Yeah. They had one with Starbucks. They camped outside.
I missed this.
That was a big deal. But the number one was the Cabbage Patch Kid riots of 1983.
The what now?
The Cabbage Patch Kid riots of 83. Apparently there were riots that took place all over the country for these Cabbage Patch dolls.
Riots.
I have to say my mom was probably involved in one. So I'll just put that out there.
It's harrowing.
When you got a little kid, a little child that wants that doll, you'll do whatever you got to do to get it.
These watches. Do you know anything about these watches?
Very little, except that they're pocket watches. They're plastic.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
Every day when you pass like 30 or so, you're just reminded you have no idea what the hell's going on anymore.
Yeah.
Like, this is just another reminder. What is going on?
I don't know.
We don't know anymore.
But it was chaos. It wasn't us. So there you go. We'll be right back. This is Studio 2.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. According to a new report, half of Americans under 50 are turning to social media influencers and podcasters for health information. Nearly a fifth say the advice they're seeing online is very or extremely different from what they've been told by healthcare providers.
Many of those surveyed say they struggle to tell what's true and what's not, which is why today we invited a couple of experts on the show to talk us through some of the most popular online health trends.
Yeah, and with us this hour are Dr. Nyree Dardarian, a certified sports nutrition specialist, registered dietitian, and director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance at Drexel University. She's also the nutritionist for the Philadelphia Flyers. Welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited for this.
Yes, we are too. And we also have Dr. Jess Steyer, public health expert, science communicator, and founder of Unbiased Science, where she hosts a podcast and creates content devoted to debunking health misinformation. Jess, welcome to Studio 2.
And I think we have Jess there probably just on mute. We'll get that worked out. We'd also love to hear from you. What online health trends do you have questions about? What are the pros and cons of health influencers? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, comment in the live chat. And we do have Jess Steyer with us. Hey, Jess, how you doing?
Can you hear me now?
Yes!
Yay!
We can't debunk without sound. Thank you so much, Dr. Jess Steyer, for being here.
And so, Jess, wanted to sort of start this because we mentioned that statistic that half of adults under 50 get their health information from influencers or podcasts. Just sort of like, if you could just sort of set the foundation for us. Why do you think so many people turn to folks, many of whom are not doctors, are not actual working experts or healthcare professionals? Why do you think people are leaning more and more towards social media?
Yeah, we really are in a pickle right now, aren't we? I think that there are a lot of different factors that are coming together at once. But the main thing is that there's a whole lot of mistrust, a lot of mistrust of the medical establishment, the scientific establishment. A lot of people are understandably frustrated or scared about issues that they're dealing with in their personal health, and they feel like they need answers. And on social media, we have thousands, tens of thousands of people who are putting out information. And happy to talk more about this, but I think that the way that information is often put out on social media is very simplified. It's very actionable. It's very, you know, this is good. This is going to save you. This will add 10 years to your life, or avoid this. This will kill you, you know. And so it makes things very actionable for people. It gives them this sense of autonomy and control over their health. And so, yeah, I think it's a perfect storm of factors that have led to the rise of social media.
And by the way, we should note that these numbers are from Pew, pretty, you know, reputable research organization. And I think it's basically what they found is that 4 in 10 U.S. adults and half of those under 50 get some health and wellness information from social media influencers and podcasts. That doesn't mean they get everything, right? And to kind of push back on the premise of our own show here, Jess, like, I probably fit into that group. Like, I see something every once in a while on Instagram with the doctor saying, like, you know, it might be something like RFK Jr. said this in his testimony. Here's why it's an oversimplification. Like, there's lots of, like, we get all sorts of information from these apps now. And it doesn't necessarily mean the information is, like, part of some woo-woo health trend. Like, I guess, how much of this do you think is actually harmful versus, like, just getting legitimate, it's just an information source, like any other information source? What's your sense of that?
You're so right, Avi, that this is, it's a real double-edged sword, because this is an opportunity to put really good information out there. And I'd like to think that myself, I'm bioscience, and a lot of other, you know, credentialed scientific folks, we use social media to put out the good information. But it's also flooded with people who don't have training or background or education in these fields. And they'll, you know, see little nuggets of information online, and they'll take it to mean something that it doesn't mean, or they'll extrapolate to the point where it's right, not factual. And that's the problem, right? Yeah. I think that a lot of people have good intentions, but, you know, without that background, things can really easily be taken out of context.
Yeah. And Nairi, I want to bring you to the conversation. I wonder, do you see yourself sort of competing with misinformation? I know you work in the world of nutrition. There's all kinds of fads out here. Do you see yourself, find yourself sort of correcting mis and disinformation that people find online?
Absolutely. I find myself defending things all the time. And I hate being put in that position, because the thing is I feel like I'm always opposing what someone is bringing to me. And the thing is, a lot of the stuff that you hear on social media that you're watching, there's always an element of truth.
Right.
There's mm-hmm. something. So that kind of hooks you, you know, you feel like, oh, well, if that's true, then maybe the rest is true. And the thing is about nutrition in particular, there are, even me, when I try to put things out on social media, and I do, I try to put facts out there, but it's part of my profession, part of our oath in a way. We are required to not give individualized information without being under some sort of nutritional purvey, let's say. So if I'm dealing with someone on an individualized level, then I can give them nutrition advice, but I can't give nutrition advice to a group of people who are just listening, because it does not fit everybody. And I think so, you're taking this little piece of truth, you're extrapolating it, and then you're applying it to yourself without looking at your full picture.
Because if somebody has like high blood pressure or some other issue, it may be a different outcome.
It's a different outcome
for them.
Yeah, I want to read this comment from Jonathan on YouTube. By the way, really encourage people to join the conversation today. Our questions: what online health trends do you have questions about? What are the pros and cons of health influencers? Our number is 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, comment in the live chat. Jonathan on YouTube says, I feel like a lot of people think doctors are dismissive of their concerns. Advice from social media folks is more accessible than a doctor's visit, which costs money and needs to be scheduled.
Yeah.
We talked about this, like, maybe trust vacuum, Jess, earlier, but there's also just like a vacuum created by time. I don't see my doctor very much. I just don't.
Totally.
You can't just text them a dumb question.
Yeah, once a year, you know? And so I think that might be the biggest thing. Like, we could maybe repair the trust gap. I don't know exactly how. Maybe. You're saying maybe. I don't know how you possibly repair the time gap. Like, at the end of the day, the social media people are in my pocket every day. I get to see my doctor once a year, and she gives me solid advice about eating fruits and vegetables. But that's kind of as much as I can get. I mean, is there a fix for that, or is that just the state of play and we've got to deal with it?
So that's a really good question that someone wrote in. So my husband's an emergency physician. And obviously, when people are showing up in the ER, they have an acute issue, right, that they need help with. And so there's not a whole lot of time to address these other questions that people have. So the reality is that our healthcare system, the way that it is, my screen just went black. I hope that you can still hear me.
We can still see you and everything.
Great.
Yeah.
The way that it's designed is we have these very short encounters with our physicians, and there just isn't that time. And to your point, yes, we have a pocket full of endless information, right, on social media. So I think the challenge is we need to accept the fact that people are going to get this information online on social media. Is there a way to maybe properly vet the information or fact check the information that's out there? And that's where I think we need need to put our attention.
Yeah. And we'll spend some time talking about that. So I want to kind of jump into some of the things that we've been seeing online. Yeah. And so, Nairi, the big trend right now is protein. Everybody's eating protein, a lot of people on GLP-1s, but I've been, you know, in the world of protein for a long, way before GLP-1s were a thing. And I just wonder, how important is protein? How much should you be eating? Because it seems like you should cut out carbs, you should cut out everything and just be protein, protein, protein with every meal.
Okay. And that's exactly the message that you're hearing. So I'm not shocked that that's how you are feeling, but I want you to look at this on a much bigger scale. First of all, there's a way to collect, they've been collecting data on nutrition for years. I don't know if you've ever heard of the NHANES study. So this is an ongoing study. And from that time, let's say 2015, I want to say 2001, up until 2015, there was no protein problem. In the United States, not many were in a state of protein deficiency, but we have had this like influx of protein and it has taken over. There's protein water. I was talking about this with my class the other day.
What?
Like
protein water.
Protein water, of all things, protein water. So I asked my students, because we were talking about this, and I said, what are some of the things that
you guys
are
hearing?
Seems
chemically impossible, by the way. Protein water.
What are they putting, protein powder in there?
But it's a clear powder. It's not like a powder that you are familiar with as protein powder. It's a clear powder and it's a plant protein. So there's also qualities of protein that I want to add in here. But despite that, we're sending the wrong information. When you eat a diet that is so high in protein, then naturally you're going to start eliminating the other parts of a diet. But we need all of it. You really need every foods are in different food groups, and they are separated into different food groups based on nutrient content. So everything or the majority of things in the fruit group have the same nutrients, the same micronutrients. The things that are in the dairy group, now you've got your calcium, your riboflavin. You need all of these to be part of a healthful diet.
So a balanced diet.
It is. And you know what? You know what? Balance doesn't sound sexy. It's not like none of this is exciting.
Balance maxing.
Like that just doesn't grasp people. And so I feel like people almost need to feel like they're suffering with eating so that they feel like they're doing something good. But eating was never meant to suffer from. It was meant to be part of like your lifestyle and social and cultural and holidays. And then now we've made it like be like morally inacceptable to eat
and
other
foods. And so everything shouldn't be protein. You should aim for a more balanced diet with protein, some carbs, some vegetables.
Your
brain
needs carbohydrates to function. You need all of the micronutrients. You need everything. So yes, it should be balanced.
Can I just rewind a little bit? Because I'm going to be the person in this conversation that doesn't really know what's going on. Why is protein in vogue? Like, what's going on? I don't even like what's the theory behind just loading up on protein.
I really think that it just comes from marketing of products. I mean, really, when you have all these products that are on the market, and so people.
But I thought it was about
adding
muscles. But I thought it was about muscle tone. You need more protein so you can be strong.
You can build more muscle by eating protein. I could sit here all day and eat all the protein that I want, and I promise you, you will see no muscle pop out of my body. You must be lifting weights. You must have resistance training. It is not a one and done. Wouldn't it be great if you just sat here and ate chicken and bam, you're Popeye? Like, that's not going to happen.
Works with spinach. He's the original influencer.
But not chicken.
He's the OG.
Okay, so let me read a comment here from Brian who says, social media will be the downfall of humanity, period.
Oh, goodness.
There are too many influencers out there with no accountability for the consequences of what they are saying. When it comes to your health, do not trust everything on social media. Social media influencers are more interested in racking up their likes and subscriptions so they look good to advertisers so they can rack in the almighty dollar. That's Brian's comment. Add yours, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. We're asking, what online health trends do you have questions about? What are the pros and cons of health influencers? I want to get to another one that's been percolating quite a bit recently, peptides.
Yeah.
Broad category. Mm-hmm. Jess, tell us about peptides. First of all, what are they? It seems like a very broad category of thing.
Yeah, y'all, we all need to get Peptide's PR agent.
They are so good.
Everyone is talking about peptides. So a peptide is just a chain of two or more amino acids, right? So
that's it?
That's it.
I
that's
love all. That's that she like. Just said that. Like, that Broke is exactly what it is. Like, that's all. How does it get all of this hype?
Well, let's explain. How does it get all of this hype? When people are hyping it up, they're obviously not – it's not because of that. So what are they hyping it up for, Jess?
So there are some peptides that we all have heard about, right? So the GLP-1s, the Ozempics, the Wegovys, those are peptides. Okay. By the way, so is insulin is technically a peptide. Oh. So there are some legit, you know, FDA-approved peptides. But now there's this whole booming industry where people are claiming that peptides can do everything. I don't even know what all the – I mean, everything under the sun. Boost your immune system. Help with – wound healing, cellular regrowth, anti-aging, all of these other claims. These peptides that people are talking about, however, have no human data to support them. They barely have animal data to support them. The majority of these peptides have preclinical. So we're talking like cell studies, in vitro studies, things that are done in labs, where we're just really trying to lay the groundwork for what could the mechanism be, right? Mm-hmm. For these peptides. We don't even understand fully what they're targeting in our body.
So quick follow up for you, Jess, because I've heard the peptide argument. I'm going to throw it out there. Like, I follow a lot of peptide people. And one of the things that they talk about is skincare, right? The peptides are these signals that's supposed to reverse aging on your skin. And I have some peptide serums. So you telling me
that the don't do it. Don't do it.
Wait, but what's the risk? What's the risk?
Yeah.
So, well, besides losing your money, obviously.
Aside from losing your money, aside from the fact that we have no human data on safety, we don't understand how they're working. So something like skin rejuvenation, right? You'd think that that would involve some sort of cellular growth or something to do with, right, changing your cells. So that might happen. But you know what else that we have to talk about in that same conversation is cancer. With cancer, we're also talking about cellular growth, right? Mm-hmm. And so we simply, I'm not saying that this is, you know, this is purely hypothetical, but the point is that we don't fully right. understand what the risks are because we haven't mapped out how these things are working in our bodies, what the mechanisms are, what they're targeting, what they're binding to in our bodies. And so there could be these other effects that we haven't even considered. We just completely lack the data on this.
Is this stuff legal? You can just go buy peptides? Jess? And what's the FDA saying? Are they changing their standards around this? What's going on there?
FDA regulation on them, except for the ones that are like the Wegovys and the Mounjaros. Yes. Those are FDA regulated, and they do have different purposes too. Like, some of them are designed for weight loss, and some of them were designed just for insulin support. So some of them are used kind of off label, let's say, for weight loss. But no, the rest of them are not FDA regulated. So you're just putting these things in your body, and a lot of them you're injecting. I don't understand. People are so willing to inject themselves with one of these peptides, but they're so afraid to eat like inorganic broccoli.
Injection or things. Vaccines. Wow.
It does seem so the stuff that's out there, either of you can take this, like, it's legal, it's not legal, how do you get it? Like, I guess I don't quite understand what this gray area for peptides really is. Jess, you wanted to weigh in there?
You just hit the nail on the head. It's a gray area. These are not FDA approved. These are not medical treatments. This is falling under the wellness umbrella. Right now, what we're seeing is a marketing boom. So we don't exactly even know what is in these different products. We don't know if the labels are accurate, right? The other scary thing, sort of tangential, is that people are stacking them. I know Joe Rogan was very pro-peptide. He's trying to get RFK to like push these through, FDA approval. There's something called the Wolverine stack or something like that. So I just want to say, not only do we not have the data on them? We certainly don't have the data on how they're interacting with each other. But to answer your question, it's legal. This is not a medical intervention. This is just this like wellness gray area. And so, yeah, we need so much more data.
I want to move on to some of these other stuff. But I do feel like, just to address something that I would imagine some people listening are feeling right now, it's like one of the reasons I imagine peptides are popular is because people like you say they don't work. And that's a signal for some people to actually use it. And I think that's the thing that's going to be very difficult to push past. Like your opposition, which is grounded in science, you know, Nairi, like, and I'm not questioning that at all, for some people is a signal to actually do the opposite of what you say. And like, how do we ever get past that?
I mean, that I don't know the answer to because
I know no one knows the answer.
I feel like I would be the person who goes against it too, just to go against it. And I completely understand what you're saying, but you also have to trust the judgment of professionals who've gone to school. And I mean, this is what people have dedicated their lives to, like learning about just the metabolic processes of the body, and you are listening to somebody who is just giving you a testimonial, and it's sellable, you know, like it's sellable.
Yeah, it does sound like, I mean, because, and a lot of people feel like they don't have access, and so they get the access to the things that privileged people have by using, by staring according to these testimonials. I wanted to stay with peas because we talked about protein, we talked about peptides. And I wanted to ask about parasite cleanses. And I've heard a couple of friends talk about this, about how your body is riddled with parasites, and that a couple times a year you're supposed to use this cleanse, and people can actually see the parasites coming out. Jess, I mean, can you respond to this? This is one that I would be like, that sounds a little out there. Do you have parasites in you, and should you be cleansing to get them out?
I am like dying over that. This is such a wellness grift. This absolutely kills me. Everyone needs to know that our bodies, we have organs that naturally detox our bodies, right? Okay. So kidneys and liver, all that good stuff, our lungs. I mean, there's all these ways that our body's doing this. On your question of parasites, here in the U.S., are there sometimes parasites? Absolutely. The wellness influencers would have you believe that every single time you take a bite of food, you're ingesting a parasite and you need to rid your body of it. That is simply not true. Mm. What these parasite cleanses are essentially are they're just helping you poop a lot. They're just making you go to the bathroom.
Oh my.
And so when I've opened up my TikTok and I've unfortunately seen people, show proof that their body, you know, expelled these parasites, they're showing things that are basically just like strings of mucus and poop, like normal things that we poop out, that if you're going to closely examine your poop, you're going to see these are not parasites. There is absolutely no need to take these things. They are not FDA approved. They are not studied. They're just helping you poop. That's it.
All right.
That's good to know.
Don't do that.
That's good to know. Let me read a couple comments as we get ready for the break.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bathroom break. Judy on YouTube says, I think youthfulness and longevity is about balanced diet, mobility, strength, and flexibility, plus some kind of mental health.
I like that, Judy.
Margaret says, despite all the problems in our medical care system, licensed medical professionals are legally, ethically accountable for delivering care to heal and protect health, in contrast to health influencers. Our current reality TV commander-in-chief and his cabinet blast the message so that people mistrust science and expertise in general. We'd love to hear your thoughts. What online health trends do you have questions about? What are the pros and cons of health influencers? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman, Aaron. Today, we're talking about why so many people are looking for health and medical advice in their social media feeds.
Yes, joining us to unpack the reasons why and some of the most popular online health trends are Dr. Nairi Dardarian, assistant professor at Drexel University and director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance, and Dr. Jess Steyer, public health expert and founder of Unbiased Science.
We're asking you, what online health trends do you have questions about? What are the pros and cons of health influencers? Any other thoughts on this topic? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat.
Yeah, and a YouTuber has asked, what is up with all the magnesium powder drinks I see in the stores? It claims it's good to reduce stress. Really? Nyree?
Yeah, magnesium has a lot of support behind it. There is a lot of research on magnesium, and it does help to relax smooth muscle. So with the relaxation, I think that it does play a significant role. We use it in recovery and sports nutrition for athletes. Nice to take at night because it doesn't put you to sleep, but the relaxation aspect of it. You can take it any time of the day, but it is recommended to take it at night. And so, yeah, with inflammation, it also plays a role. So I think that there's enough support there. You just have to find the right brand. You just want to find a brand.
Yeah, how do I know it actually has magnesium in it? Or like
how much
or that I would metabolize it and it will actually have an impact?
Yeah, so there are different qualities and there are different types of magnesium. And so some are better metabolized, some are better bioavailability. So I try to stick to products that have some sort of secondary seal on it. So it might have a seal on it that it has been third-party tested. That's what you want to look into. There's a lot of different third-party seals. They're all relatively the same. So you just want to make sure that it has had some additional testing. Mm-hmm. That does raise the price a little bit, but it's worth it to have that. So it's also, not only will it make sure, quote-unquote, that it has what it says in it, but it also less chance that it is contaminated with anything else.
And Jess, wanted to ask you, and shift gears, thank you for that, Nyree. I wanted to ask you about another health trend, Jess. This one is turmeric. You know, a lot of people have been talking about the spice, turmeric. A lot of people use it for a lot of different reasons. They put it in even masks for your face and all kinds of stuff. Can you tell us what the trend is, why people use it, and could it go wrong? Because I've also seen on some episodes of The Pit, people overusing turmeric and getting sick. So break it down for us.
We love a Pit shout out. Such an amazing show. So, turmeric. Yes, I think this is a classic example of, it's natural, so it must be amazing for us. It must be good for us. So the part of turmeric that people are talking about is curcumin, which is a polyphenol that's found in the root of turmeric. Now, the claims are, I think you alluded to some of them, but basically this panacea, wound healing, immune health, gut health, all the things that we hear about. The interesting thing about this is that there have been tons of studies published, but recently we found out there's been a lot of research fraud, which is horrific to even note. Oh. But that means all the studies that people cite have been deemed fraudulent. So really, when you look at the evidence we do have, there is not a whole lot of evidence, if any, that support the claims that are being made. And then, Cherry, you mentioned there are absolutely some downsides to this. So if you have too much of it, it could really impact our liver. It could lead to toxicity. There have been hospitalizations. There have even been deaths. I think there are some countries, please, I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but I think it's Italy and others have actually banned the advertising of turmeric for this reason. So not a whole lot of evidence that it works, and we do know that it can be harmful.
Because you're thinking this is a spice. You can use it on your food, but if you take it in mass quantities.
Well, it's fine to use on your food, right?
It's fine to use on your food. But we're talking about the curcumin. Mass quantities. That you can only get in supplement form.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have the curcumin in the supplement form, but putting it on your food will have some health benefits. And you want a diversity of spices on your food. But again, it's a lot of different. You want a lot. The thing is,
you want
a diet that has all different types of foods in it, not single types of foods and not just protein, for example. Just protein and turmeric is still not even better. Okay.
let's read a couple comments here. Dandelion Greens on YouTube says they're There's always been food fads promoted by unqualified people, and legit nutritional science is always evolving. It's hard to keep up, but social media has taken all of this to an extreme. Here's a question from Joe in Bryn Mawr, who says, could you talk about creatine and if it's good for aging women? I remember creatine from my younger days, Nyria. Lots of people who were into weightlifting would use it. I don't know. First of all, I guess you should tell people what it is. It does seem to be having a moment. I'm not quite sure why. Can you explain why?
Creatine is highly researched. There's a lot of good support to creatine. And so creatine, basically, mainly with muscle development for power and for mainly power, okay, and then a little bit into endurance, and now into the longevity field. We're talking about aging. So there is a place for it in all of those. But the one thing that I want people to take away from this is back to like the protein. Creatine is meant to be used alongside of resistance training. It cannot work on its own. So you have to have that aspect to it. But it does. There's quality research that helps support that you will build muscle, you will improve power and endurance by taking creatine, and possible some brain health, if you want to use the broad term brain health when it comes to aging. So yes, that is something, and all different amounts. So 5 milligrams is really the place that you want to start. But again, on the opposite side of it, you do want to stay hydrated, and you do want to make sure you're taking a quality brand. Back to the third-party
verification.
Janice says, I follow a lot of fitness influencers because seeing their posts remind me to do all kinds of stretches and exercises I might not do otherwise. And Lou says, the trend that I'm sticking with is going to my healthcare professionals. It has taken me years to assemble a group of folks that I trust. Of course, I'm lucky to have adequate insurance. So some people, there's good reasons to use them. And then there's also your doctors. I wanted to throw out there another couple of things to you, Nari, because another trend that I've seen in the things that you have in your house department is a lot of use of apple cider vinegar. A lot of people take multiple shots a day. They drink it with water. They say it's supposed to boost your metabolism. It also cleanses you. It makes me sweat. So, and I don't like the taste. But does apple cider vinegar have good benefits? Is there too much?
Apple cider vinegar is a great example of what you can do without making things taste bad in your life.
Okay.
So is there some sort of truth to it? Can it improve your metabolism? No, it's not going to speed up your metabolism. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could all just drink apple cider vinegar
and get the teenage metabolism?
But it's a fermented product too. Like, so it does help with inflammation, stomach issues, chronic, perhaps can play a role in decreasing insulin levels. But you can put this in your salad dressing. It doesn't have to be so bad. So like even in the sports teams that I've worked in, it was part of our salad bar. So no one had to come around you don't have to make it sound so bad, but you're doing an apple cider vinegar shot. How about you just have your vinegar and oil, olive oil dressing be apple cider vinegar, and then you've kind of gotten that into your... Wrap it into a good food habits. Good food habits throughout the day.
Yeah. Let's talk about another item, Jess. Raw milk. What is it?
Why do you want to drink that?
Why are people into it, seemingly?
I'm with you, Terry. Why are people wanting to drink this? You know, I often hear, you know, oh, but we drank it back in the day. Yeah, Karen, and we died at 20 unnecessarily of dysentery, you know? The appeal to history is at fault here. Okay, raw milk is just an unpasteurized milk. All pasteurization is heating up milk to kill the bad stuff, the pathogens, the bacteria, the viruses, all that stuff. It's so funny because I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and now I live in Western Massachusetts surrounded by dairy farms. If you've ever been to a dairy farm and you've seen a cow, you see some things that would make you not want to drink raw milk.
All right, we're back in the poop conversation. All right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All roads back to poop with me, apparently. But it's true. I mean, they're sitting in the poop. They're sitting in the dirt. And, you know, I've seen all these claims that, oh, but raw milk is more nutritious. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Heat does cause super minor reductions in certain heat-sensitive vitamins, like vitamin C and B, I believe. But we're talking such minuscule levels that have no clinically significant impact on the nutritional value. I've seen claims that raw milk is okay for people who are lactose intolerant. No, it's not. You know, exactly. Thank you. So this is another one. Please, please, please do not drink raw milk. And the last thing, sorry, if I may, that there are other things like, I don't know if you remember in the news, I guess last year, H5N1, avian flu. It's possible that things like that, viruses can live and potentially be transmitted via raw milk. So there are so many reasons you want to stay away from this stuff.
A CDC review counted more than 200 outbreaks tied to raw milk that sickened more than 2,600 people and sent 225 to hospitals between 1998 and 2018. That's according to the Associated Press.
Yeah. And so I wanted to shift to another big question that has come up. Nyree and seed oils. Are they toxic or is this sort of like internet panic? Can you tell us a little bit about them and why people have raised concerns?
Sure. Seed oils just jumped out of nowhere really as being something that is so toxic. But seed oils are used in a lot of our foods. We eat a lot of foods. There's all different types of seed oils.
And tell us, give us a little
list. We have the seed oils that they say that they became toxic overnight. Is that true? No. We have soybean oil, canola oil, sunflower oil, corn oil. All these are seed oils. Mm-hmm. You can use them, again, in the word moderation. But the thing, I think that where this hype came out about it is basically because seed oils are what is found in a lot of ultra-processed foods. Mm-hmm. So it's not really the seed oil itself, but it's the way that it's being presented to us in our food. So a lot of our ultra-processed foods contain seed oil. So it may not be the seed oil itself, but it's the way in the context that we're consuming it. And then if you eat a lot of ultra-processed foods, you might want to blame seed oil for what the harm could be, but truthfully, it's the high fat, it's the high sodium, mm-hmm. it's the
sugar,
high
glucose,
it's all the rest of it that comes with that. But mm-hmm. if you're just putting canola oil a little bit into your stir fry or something, that is not the harm. That is not what is going to harm you.
Okay, all right, cleared that up.
On this topic, I guess, of ultra-processed food, and we're winding down time here, but there was a comment earlier, I think it went away, but someone was saying that their doctor was, like, even admonishing them for eating, like, whole wheat bread that they bought at the store because it was sort of ultra-processed, right? There is some issue, right, Jess, with ultra-processed foods, eating too many snacks, fatty foods, etc. Is there a place where it goes to a level of panic, or like we can over index on that when it comes to like our opposition to ultra processed foods? Some general thoughts on that.
Yeah, general thoughts are that we are fear mongering a lot about ultra processed foods. First of all, there's all kinds of things we could say about how we don't even have a really clear understanding or definition for processed or ultra processed, right? But you can safely eat ultra processed foods as part of a larger, diverse, nutritious diet. You just don't want it to completely displace the good stuff. I think that's the big problem.
For some Americans, right? I mean, that's legit.
That absolutely. I mean, you think about fast food, right? Yep. Things that are easy to consume, quick, cheap. So that is problematic. But I think that, you know, labeling a food as inherently bad is problematic and not accurate.
Yeah. And as we get ready to wrap up, I wanted to get each of you to give kind of like your rule of thumb for assessing, you know, whether or not an online trend is something we should follow or not, or you know, or whether or not it's a valid thing. Like
approaching information.
How should we approach these health trends?
Jess, do you want to go first? Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot that I could say, but the number one thing would be show me the human data. people will, you know, talk, they'll put out these trends and they'll talk about studies. But if you actually take a look, we're talking about studies in rats. So, yeah, if I'm a rat being submerged in a bucket of red dye, maybe that's problematic. But right. But it's not problematic for humans. So always look for human data. And also the dose makes the poison. I know people have heard us say this. The dose makes the poison. It also makes the benefit. So if you're talking about a trend, how much would I need to consume for it to actually be beneficial? Think about side effects, potential drug interactions. And then, okay, you're saying that this thing is good, but how much of it would I actually need to consume to get that clinical benefit?
Mm.
I like how you said there's two sides of things. One is how if you're consuming too much of it, what could happen? But then also meeting the amount that you need for clinical benefit. And so that goes both ways, because sometimes they're just saying have a little bit, but really that's going to have no clinical benefit. But to layer on to what Jess said, I think it's just really evaluating the extreme of the conversation. If it is very extreme, then that is probably not the way to go. So that's just like in very basic terms. Like if it's saying this is all you should do or all you need is this one product,
probably
that kind of is a like red flag. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Balance. A balanced conversation today. Thank you so much, Dr. Nairi Dardarian, assistant professor at Drexel, director of the Center for Nutrition and Performance there. Thank you so much for your time on Studio 2.
Thanks. This is great.
Thank you, Jess Steyer, public health expert and founder of Unbiased Science. Jess, great having you on the program.
So fun. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody online, our YouTubers and everybody who wrote in and had their questions. We really appreciate you and someone else, some folks we also appreciate, our producers, Debbie Bilder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Paige Marie Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.